keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso. Dope so, no overdose. Cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Here with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Finally joined back by our good co-host here, DB. He's been out for a couple shows, but he's back with us in the studio. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good. I'm relaxed and all that, and I was up in NorCal checking out a music festival and all that, and it's funny to be up there because you know how it's like the counterculture historically, the 60s and Fillmore and everything like that, and all the hippies, and then, of course, all their kids are up in the Bay Area. And I have to say, dude, like, just from the context of some of the stuff going on at the concert, like, awareness is at the epicenter up there again. Like, people are really understanding what it is. In fact, so much so that now, like, fast food joints are starting to advertise no GMOs. You know what I mean? Like, you'll go to a little town and they'll be like Bob's Burgers, you know, whatever, drive through there, and it'll say in the sign, no GMOs served here. Up in NorCal, because people know and they won't eat it. They stop, literally have stopped buying it. At this point, if it's not organic, then it's kind of like, you know?
Yeah. I was in Berkeley not too long ago, a few months back, visiting my brother and stuff. And we walked down to the store, and you know, we're in South Berkeley, where it is, you know, it is kind of a, you know, it's not the greatest side of town, you know, basically. But, I mean, we walked to the nearest grocery store, and we're talking, like, 70% of the stuff in there was organic. You know what I mean? And then it's like here when you just walk down, down here in San Diego, where you just walk to the supermarket, like Bonds or whatever. Up there in Berkeley, man, it's like, I mean, and they got raw milk on the shelves. I mean,
yep.
And the prices are low. And my, I got a buddy that works up there at a Whole Foods in San Francisco. Right, and so the way that they get their produce is that they have to source it, like, literally within, like, just a certain amount of miles. It has to come from within a certain amount of miles from the store just to fit the criteria that they're trying to get,
right?
Which is, like, the most locally grown, you know, the least amount of transportation times.
I mean,
all organic, non-GMO stuff, and it's working pretty well out there, man, and it's creating a big economy for the counter food movement, or whatever you want to call it, the food freedom movement. My friend's doing pretty well. I mean, he's making good money working at Whole Foods because it's just a booming opportunity because so many people are moving into the better, you know, they realize that it's cheaper to get better food now than to pay the medical bills later
right.
on.
I mean, it's simple. It's just analytics for these people. You have to understand, like, it's a very highly educated populace. From the people I just talked to, because I went up there, you know, and I'm visible, and I would talk to people, just whatever. And we would get to talking about, hey, that's good food or whatever at this music festival I was at. Where'd you get it? And I'd tell them where I get it. They're like, oh, they're good. They're all organic. This is thrown around like it's a thing. Like it's a way to draw people now to go eat at your place. So that's where it starts. It's going to spread out from there. I just never realized what a food desert we live in SoCal. Like nothing we have up tastes anything near as good as Northern California. So much so that, you know, it makes me realize we have a massive niche market we need to fill down here with fresh produce that is grown aquaponically.
Aquaponics, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
We're in a food desert. I don't care how rich you are. If you're a millionaire and you live in SoCal, you're still getting something shipped in. It doesn't matter. But if we have these warehouses right now sitting vacant and they can be, you know, occupied by people and growing fresh produce and doing it at a good price, let's flood these markets and force all these freeze-dried things out of here, these 300-mile truck trips from El Centro to feed us. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's not that we don't have the climate. We've got a great climate. We got plenty of sunshine. It's the water, you know? We don't have much water. So aquaponics is a perfect solution because aquaponics uses one-tenth of what you would use if you had a growing crops in the ground.
Right.
So, I mean, aquaponics on a larger scale, I mean, that is a really good solution, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's all about getting it more and more decentralized, which means getting it local. You know, the local food movement is awesome because they unknowingly, I bet, a lot of these people don't even realize how much of a act of civil disobedience that they're engaging in by just buying local food because it's creating this decentralized food supply that we all know is so important because with a centralized food supply, it fluctuates so much. And it can be manipulated, and it inevitably reduces our freedom. So the more decentralized, the more local we can source our food, the more freedom that we're going to have, the more autonomy that we're
going
to have.
Right. I mean, it's up there at the point now where there's some food bartering going on. We went to a farmer's market in San Luis Obispo, and we went at the end of the night, and we were seeing the farmers trading whatever they hadn't sold. And it'll become that way. It's going to become soon that if you're not making like a lot of money, the only way you're going to have any really bargaining power or wealth will be having a farm. Because if you make 50 a year and that buying power gets cut in half when the dollar drops, you're making 25,000 a year. Have fun with that. But if you're a guy with a farm and before you were making 30,000 a year, but now you have food, well now you're making like 200,000 a year.
Yeah,
you can
more.
Charge whatever you want.
Yeah, because food is one thing that will always retain its value. You know, because that's one thing that people always need. Even above, I think, above gold and silver and all that, food and water is above all the most precious resource, and that's the thing that people should really use to supply their bartering and to use as a way of opting out and things like that. You know, reducing your tax burden and all those things, and increasing your ability to be independent. Man, I mean, that's what it's really about. The way you receive freedom is through independence, and the more independent you can be with as many things as you can do, the more freedom you're going to have, the less other people are going to be able to control you.
Yep, and you know, it's funny you say that because I read the article about the new wind turbine windmill that's making like 80% efficiency when they had mistakenly thought 59% was the theoretical limit on it. So it's destroyed the limit of efficiency, and it can make a ridiculous amount of power, 9 kilowatts, it can power half of your home. So if you tied two of those in, one at the front, one at the back of your house, and then blanketed your roof with solar panels, do you think you'd ever have a bill ever?
No.
In the rest of your life?
And then now we talked about the food. Now, of course, you can't grow food without having water. And once you have the ability to create excess electricity, then what we talked about maybe a few shows ago, about how you can condense water out of air. So when you have an excess amount of electricity, that basically guarantees that you're going to have water if you use a condenser, which guarantees that you can grow your own food. So I mean, we're talking about maybe the most revolutionary idea at this point in time is getting yourself off grid with your electricity, more or less.
Yes.
Because once you're off grid with your electricity and you have an excess, that means you have water, and that means you can have crops.
Yeah, exactly. And you can
anywhere,
even make,
anywhere.
And you can even make, you know, you can make nitrogen fertilizer out of thin air, provided you can make enough amps. I mean, this is what they're doing right now. This is how the Green Revolution started in the 70s that prevented the famine they thought was going to hit. You can make fertilizer out of thin air. You just need to have the right setup and enough electricity. So if you can make fertilizer, water, and power, and you have dirt already in your yard...
Then you got fish, man. Like, the nursery right here by my place, like, the best one in San Diego, it's down in City Heights. It's called a City Farmers Nursery or something. Their whole operation, and it's cool because it's only 1 acre, man, but they got goats, chickens, they got a ton of crops. They've got an aquaponic system, but all of their crops are fed from aquaculture, where they have this little pond, and they have koi. Mm-hmm. And stuff living in this pond, and all that is basically they just siphon off that dirty water, mm-hmm. use that to feed the plants, and then they add clean water into the system. So you don't really have to worry about fertilizer if you can get fish,
right?
And keep some fish growing in a tank, and then you can keep expanding the size of the tank as the fish get bigger and start to breed, and then you're gonna have fertilizer forever.
Yep, I mean it's almost perpetual. So
there's the only thing you need to add. Is either some kind of power. So either electricity, you could run an aquaponic system completely manually too.
Right.
If you had like a bicycle set up to run a pump or whatever, you could actually have it set up like that, but it's going to be a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
So it of course it's better to be able to power it with electricity. That's really what the only thing you really have to add into the system besides water, the evaporation. Yeah. Okay, so you have your initial fill of your water, and if you build the structure correctly, you'll have very little evaporation. The only thing you'll have to compensate for is maybe once a week you have to add like 5 to 10% water due to evaporation or the plants, you know, soaking up the water, you know.
Yeah.
That's basically what we have here at my place. We hardly get any evaporation, man. It's mostly the plants uptaking it. And then we filter off the water at my place and use it to feed the garden, you know, which gives it the garden most of the nutrients it needs and stuff. And now that fertilizer from the aquaponic system, it's so strong, you can dilute it way down, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's like concentrate. So,
or you can let your crops grow like weeds.
Well, yeah, if you balance it out right, I mean, it could even be too much if you're not careful.
I know kale can grow like a pound a day if you just have a little bed. I mean, it sprouts up overnight.
Kale is awesome, and it grows really well. It's resistant to most pests.
And cold.
Yeah, man, it's a sturdy plant, so healthy.
Yep, it's what we're finding now is, like, all these weird things like kale and, like, amaranth and all these weird supposed weeds, they're superfoods. They're only categorized as weeds just like, you know, pot's categorized as a drug because they're a threat to some established industry and somebody's lobbying them into some category to make them...
Well, hey, without weeds, how are you going to sell weed control, dude? It's probably to do to Monsanto,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're starting to see that a lot of these supposed weeds are most likely ancient grain mutations. These are things that the human body does real well on. They're very healthy. And just with a little lemon and olive oil, you make almost anything delicious.
We've been eating dandelion greens, man. I got a bunch in the garden, and I just found out maybe like a few months ago that they're actually good. So when I see them, I pull them out if they're too close to other things. But if they're by themselves, I just let them grow, man. We've been putting a little bit in salads. My brother is studying to be like a herbologist, and he brought his book over, and we looked up what you could use to or what you can use the dandelions for. And dude, you turn the whole plant, like the root and everything, you just clean it up, and then you just turn it into a paste, and you could put it in with your bath. You could put it on your skin, like where you have like acne or whatever on your skin. You put this stuff on your skin, and it like takes down the acne and all this stuff. I mean, it's like. It's got, like, multiple uses, man, like 5 or 6 different uses that are pretty good. I mean...
And everything does have, like, a multiple use, you know, almost everything. Coconut oil is, like, amazing.
Yeah.
There's so many different things you can do holistically and cut. You can start making things, like, you know, me and my... we've been talking about making, you know, like, deodorant and toothpaste out of, you know, olive oil and coconut oil. Like, and you can make them in such massive large batches for like $20. What do you spend a year on deodorant and toothpaste? Most people probably spend like
$100. Yeah, over $100.
I mean, you can make a huge vat of both of those things for $20 and then start selling out what you can't use to other people. And you can scent them all weird. You can put all kinds of weird scents in them.
Yeah, I mean, and then you could use stevia. I saw, I got this toothpaste from Trader Joe's that's, like, fluoride-free. And, no, not that one. The one that my mom has at her house, it's, I think it's called, like, Kiss My Face toothpaste or whatever. And it's sweetened with stevia. And stevia is that natural plant that anyone could grow. And then you cut the leaf off. It's like it's basically like an herb, but the thing is that it's very, very sweet. It's almost as sweet as like aspartame and all those artificial sweeteners, but this stuff is natural. It's like grown in a plant. It's like, and you just powder that stuff down or smash that up, mix it in with the toothpaste, and there's your sweetener.
There you go.
A little baking soda to make a little abrasiveness to or whatever.
Some coconut oil.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us, and I guess this whole, we talked about earlier with the whole food debate, man, is that I think a lot of the people up there in Northern California are realizing that, you know, it's better to get the good food now rather than pay for it later on with their health.
Yep.
And we were talking earlier about the healthcare system before the show started and the situation that you're going through. And then after that, if you want to talk about that real quick, then we'll jump into this whole veterans, the VA scandal and all the things going on with that. And we're going to have a special guest to talk about a little bit about what's going on there. So, yeah, man, you were saying that your friend is dealing with some really bad issues with the medical system.
Right.
And the bureaucracy and just all the missteps they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, this is just public. It's public health care. It's an HMO. It's like you don't have a choice what kind of health care you're going to get. Your company just kind of arbitrarily goes with their cheapest competitor or whatever it is. And you go and you get, you know, you get subprime care for it. I mean, she went in and she, you know, had a double fracture in her fibia and had to have a titanium support rod and screws put in. And, you know, she got it put in and it started healing up, but then it's not really healing. It's still really inflamed. And did they test to see if she was allergic to titanium, which is what it's made out of? No. They didn't even do a simple test. It's probably not in their protocol. So that's what we get. You know, we're getting a declining quality of care, not only in the private, you know, civilian sector, but that's a perfect segue into the problems with the VA and how it's being basically gutted. And it doesn't matter if they change the head of the snake. The snake's still basically constricting all the vets out of quality health care. It's, like, ridiculous.
Well, I think if we look all the way to the root of this thing, right, because now we're looking at the healthcare system, how it's just become this huge inflated insurance, basically an insurance scam, right? The healthcare system as a whole, where the cost of care has gone up exponentially, and the quality of care, if anything, has probably gone down.
Yep.
And the access and everything is gone down, and meanwhile the prices are just going through the roof. I mean, what we have like a crazy amount of increase in medical costs year over year. It's like over 10%, I believe.
Well,
actually,
in the last decade, I believe it's gone up like 600%, and that we've actually plummeted from, I think we were like barely in the 20s, like we were 20 or 21, and now we're ranked like 38th in the world in healthcare. France and Italy are 1 and 2, but we plummeted, man, since the 70s when Nixon took off the single payer plan that had worked perfectly. We always like to harken back to Ron Paul's example. I used to deliver a baby for $50 and that was it. That was all you paid me. Now when you go deliver a baby at a hospital, you can expect a $5,000 bill. Expect it.
Minimum.
I mean, you're going to hit your deductible no matter what.
Hey, they just look at your insurance and they're like, all right, how good is their insurance?
Exactly.
Okay, it's real good? All right, we're going to give them like all this $15,000, $20,000. Yeah, man. I mean, I got screwed at the hospital too, man. I mean, they picked me up. I crashed out. Let's just say at a concert, and I wake up in the hospital, and they're doing all this stuff on me, man. And they were like trying to force me into all these procedures and stuff. And I was just like, no, man, no. I'm fine. I'm perfectly fine. I just want to get up out of this damn bed that you got me in with all these IVs sticking in me.
Yeah.
And I want to get up, put on my shoes, and walk home. And they were just holding me, man, and they were trying to they actually threatened me to catheterize me, dude, to get a urine sample because I was refusing to give a urine sample. And I was like, and they were like 5 minutes away from doing it to me, man. They were gonna forcibly catheterize me. And I saw the crazy thing is I saw an article about it the other day. They did it to a guy to see if he had a DUI because he was refusing to give it. And that could have been me, man, but luckily my mom actually showed up and saved me.
Yeah.
And as soon as my mom showed up, they changed their tone. They're like, oh, okay, cool. All right, man, you can get up, you know. And they had me, like, held down. It was like, ah, oh, dude, it was insane.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the prices are just skyrocketing. And the amount of care is going down. And unless you got great insurance, then they're gonna charge you, but they're going to charge you a lot. Well, and I think it all goes back to this whole monetary scheme, dude. This whole thing, this whole inflated monetary system. Now, the perfect example is with the VA, right? So, obviously, the VA gets a budget every year, right? Congress gives the VA a budget. The budget is going to be a certain amount. But guess what? Guess what's outpacing that the increase in the budget to the VA? The inflation. So, the currency is inflating way faster than the budgets are increasing. So basically, these guys are getting more money on paper. Yeah, they're getting more money, but the value of that money, and considering that the healthcare costs are going up so quickly, dude, they're basically one of the biggest victims of the Federal Reserve, of the monetary system, and of Wall Street.
Yes, I mean, definitely, we should we should be doing a lot more for them. We should actually have our guest come on and talk a little bit about it if he wants to, but
yeah. So we have a guest tonight that is a vet, a veteran of the war in Afghanistan, and he's going to talk a bit about what he's experienced at the VA and the bureaucracy and all the stuff that's been going on at the VA, because right now we got 100,000 veterans that are awaiting medical treatment. I mean, this is a lot of effing people that are sitting there, 100,000 guys, waiting to get treatment. And some of these guys, they're going over 3 months without seeing a doctor. And so we have a guest on to talk about how it's been, what his experience is in the VA.
Hi, how you doing, folks? My name is Jay. First off, I'd like to say the healthcare has definitely diminished within the VA department itself. My experience in the past 3 months, it's pretty sad. I just gotta say that it took me about 3 months to actually get some real severe help with something I had going on, and I'm not the only veteran experiencing it. I actually went to a program today at the VA where all of us veterans get to sit down and talk to each other about our experiences, and two veterans out of the group of about 8 people, they said they hadn't gotten immediate health care since I got out of service for about 3 to 4 months. And it's just ridiculous to see how my fellow brothers are, and my fellow sisters as well, are suffering because the amount of health care that we're receiving is not adequate enough to sustain us.
Yeah, and you look at it and it's like, well, these politicians, okay, they're willing to send you guys out there to fight these wars.
Right.
But then they're not willing to take responsibility when you guys come back. They just want to, you guys went, did everything you did, and that's it.
Yeah.
But that's not the deal. I mean, the deal is that you guys are gonna be taken care of.
Right.
So if these politicians, they're basically selling everybody a raw deal, man. I mean, it's not right what they're doing. So it's like, how can they justify sending our people into combat if these people are know damn well that they're not going to receive any help when they get back?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I think it really says a lot about the way Congress is running things right now, when they're starting to, they're actually, believe it or not, actually, besides the healthcare, they're going for our guns, they're going for our healthcare, they're taking away and stripping away our benefits and stripping away our rights as veterans, the people who really do, in a time of war, defend this country and really do really help sustain the defense of this country altogether. You know, I think it's really sad how it took me a long time to actually get my benefits. It took me about 2 years to actually get my benefits once I got discharged from the Army. And
damn, 2 years?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So for 2 years, you basically, you were on your own, right? Fending for yourself,
pretty
more
much.
Or less.
Getting help from my family, getting help from the people who really care about me, and it's a pretty hard road, man. And even then, it's still not enough, because, I mean, it's almost like all they see us as is just a way to make money. and a way to arbitrate the system in order to cycle money towards their pockets and their agenda, as opposed to actually helping us, the veterans who really need the help.
Yeah, one of the most infuriating things for me when I first came across this story about the VA scandal and it first started breaking, was that these guys, the reason why a lot of this stuff was happening was because these guys were forging their waiting lists and they were forging the times that it took people to get served in order to receive bonuses.
Right.
These administrators, these bureaucrats that work at the VA, they were fudging the numbers. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of people on waiting lists. For instance, at that one in Arizona where the story first broke,
right,
a bunch of guys died because they didn't get to get any medical attention. And meanwhile, these fat cats are loading up on bonuses. You know, they're probably pulling in over 200, 300 grand a year or whatever after all these bonuses and stuff.
Right.
Because what the government does is they have a reward system in place because they're trying, quote-unquote, trying to clean up the bureaucracy and the corruption at the VA. But their only idea of fixing it is giving a bonus system for the places that do better.
Right.
And then they can't even do that right because now they're trying to cheat the system and fudging their numbers and people end up suffering. You know, so it's just kind of like this overall, to me it's like this overall tone of the system, man. It's just backward, it's run backwards. It's not being run correctly. It's all being destroyed by the Federal Reserve. Let's face it. Social Security, Medicare, Medi-Cal, any entitlement, any disability, any kind of government assistance, food stamps, anything like that. It's all being destroyed by the monetary system because it's being watered. The buying power of the money that they give us, the money that is budgeted in the Congress, that buying power is being diminished. Meanwhile, all the prices are going through the roof.
Yes.
I mean, let's look at gas prices. They've pretty much stabilized at $4. I don't see gas prices going up or down anytime soon. I mean, if anything, they're going to go up. So we're looking at gas prices that are through the roof. Therefore, if you look at the gas prices and the correlation to the food prices, it's almost identical. I did an article on it the other day. I can't even remember what it was called, but if you Google it, I'm sure you'll find it. I was able to show that the food prices and the gas prices are directly correlating.
Yep.
And then I was also able to show that the value of the currency and the amount of stimulus coming out of the Fed directly correlated with the gas price, which means it directly correlates with the food price.
Yep.
So, I mean, everything that we're talking about here, the healthcare, the people in the military that are getting paid from the military, anybody working in the government, anybody on Social Security, anybody on any kind of entitlement, is being absolutely undermined by this monetary policy. And I think it's like we all attack every object individually, and there's a different angle for each way, right? But the overall bearing weight over us, right? The main thing holding us all down is the monetary system and the bureaucracy.
Yep.
And the bureaucracy is basically a product of the monetary system and the way the monetary system is run. You know, so I mean, that's where, I mean, if we're going to reform anything, and I'm not a reformist by any means, but if we're going to talk about reform, I mean, the monetary system is at the root of it all. And the underlying problem at the VA is, yeah, they're getting a budget increase every year. Maybe they get a 2%, 3% increase. But guess what? The real inflation is up around 10%.
Yep.
Or higher.
And that doesn't even say anything about the veterans who are coming back from war right now. I mean, if they got to really get their shit together, because I mean, if they can't even support the veterans who are just barely getting out of the service, you know, right now, how are they going to be able to take care of all the veterans who are about to come home from Afghanistan? It really scares me.
Well, I mean, the proposed changes that came out of this whole debacle were that they're going to build 24 new centers, which are probably going to be just barely enough to cover what they need now, which is where you're saying is right. They need probably double that, at least 50 more. And then they're also saying if you live more than 40 miles away from another facility for the VA, you could go to a private doctor and they'll cover it. But imagine that bureaucratic red tape nightmare when private doctors start billing the VA.
And even worse.
And they're gonna bill the hell out of them, too.
Yeah. And even worse, it's going to cost the government even more money because then they're going to have to go through the private sector
through the less subsidized side of things.
Right, and they're going to wind up paying even more.
And then what you're going to see is the like DB was saying, the doctors are going to start reaming the VA. The doctor, you got this government money coming out, which basically has zero accountability. Okay, well, we're going to charge this guy $2,000 for an $800 procedure.
And then they're going to wind up charging twice the amount that the normal person would wind up paying.
The thing is, anyone who's inside the system knows that they can bill to ad infinitum. They can literally just write their own ticket because they know. Anybody who's educated knows what the Federal Reserve is. The Federal Reserve is a money printing organization that has the strongest military that ever roamed the earth to back up their policy. That's it. So anybody who has an advanced degree in this country already knows where their money comes from and already knows that they can bill whatever the hell they want.
And I've got proof of this of the way that these private, quote unquote, private sector hospitals and doctors and stuff do bill the government like way higher than they should be.
And they can't be
now the information I haven't received permission to publish it yet or talk about it, but I mean I can talk about it vaguely. I had a friend that worked at a hospital, and yes, whenever they had government dealings, they charged the hell out of them.
Yep.
And my friend told me. My friend told me, like, and my friend has proof of what these things do. And my friend doesn't work there anymore. So I mean, sooner or later, I'll be able to get permission to talk about this stuff in detail, which will be nice. But yes, the this is what's going to happen if they do this. So if they're going to make some kind of superficial deal that's going to fix the VA, so they're going to say, and of course the mainstream media is going to take it up hook, line, and sinker, and everyone's like, oh, the VA is all fixed, except for the guys like our guest tonight,
right,
is still going to have to deal with that VA, and it's just because the media says it's fixed and the government's write a new law, doesn't mean that it's going to be fixed or that the problem's going away. Like we were saying, it's an overall being dictated by the monetary system, and this huge inflation rate. I mean, I've been seeing inflation like crazy, man. The food prices, the gas prices.
Well, can we talk about the Bilderberg? Did you read anything about what happened this year with the entire meeting in Copenhagen?
No, I know that all I saw about it that we reported on mostly was about a few journalists. Luke Rutkowski, the guy I actually met in L.A. From We Are Change, was arrested with Dan Dix, which is from Press for Truth. And then I saw a kid, just like a teenager kid, man, getting arrested over there. He was just videotaping, and the cops were, pushing him around. And then they took him back behind defensible area back there, and they took the kid back there, and you just hear the kid screaming. I mean, I don't know what they did to him. On the video, you couldn't see it. But that's all I know about it. Oh, what'd you hear?
Well, I did a lot of research on it, and I actually found out that this was the very first time that people that were involved with it were able to give interviews after, and they gave interviews to InfoWars and RT and a couple other news sites. These are people that were on the Bilderberg list. And that actually some of the heads of some of the strongest families you've never heard of came out and gave speeches, and they're available online. So if you want to look into it, I mean, the guy that runs the world came out. If you really want to look into the bloodlines and shit, the guy that runs everything came out. I'm not going to say his name because that's just inviting too much trouble. But you can find out if you want. The Bilderbergers just came out with their agenda, and they want to become transparent because they understand, the very, very most wealthy people in the world understand, that they are now an endangered species with the transhumanism movement coming out, that because they're regular flesh and blood humans like me and you, that their days are numbered too, and that they now need our help to stop what they've created. I believe we're at that point where we're at the singularity right now, but it's not at all like they thought it would be.
Well, I think that... I think that these guys just got so much heat in the last few years, of course, led by Alex Jones, which we all got our opinions on Alex Jones.
Right.
Slowly it's led to a few details being leaked and stuff like that. And now these guys, what I think about the Bilderberg is that now it's just all for show now. And that now, ever since like maybe a year or two ago after it got big in the media and stuff, they just decided, okay, we're gonna keep doing this thing just to keep these guys in a whirl, and then we're gonna have a new meeting somewhere else and some other time where no one's gonna know about it, at least for another few years. So they probably go into these meetings and they have like some superficial discussions and stuff like that, but I don't think that they're doing any like real kind of, you know, trying to dictate the direction of humanity type of stuff like I think these kind of people are able to do, because we're talking about the richest, most powerful, most influential people in the entire world coming right. together to talk about policy. And basically they're coming together to say, hey, this is the direction that we should be taking the world, and that and right. it moves in that direction. Now, most times, yeah, it moves to enrich their own profits.
Right.
But obviously, if you look at what's been going on in the world lately and all the horrible things in Syria, Ukraine, and all these people just dying left and right, the ongoing conflict in Afghanistan and all the other insane fights and wars going on all over the place, obviously, whatever we've been doing, we've been doing it wrong. Right, whatever we went wrong at some point.
Well,
or sometime.
Wrong according to who? That's the biggest issue. Is like we always say things are awful and the leadership is awful and blah. This is all it's conceived.
It's all like common knowledge now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's when a final chaos is made where everybody in the world is absolutely paranoid and insane with fear. They'll take any form of security that even equals total control over their lives. That's the whole goal. That's what autocracy
is. I've been seeing it, man. I've been seeing it, and it's coming out right now in the media, bro. It's like they've gone into overdrive these last few weeks.
They have to, because
I don't know if you've noticed.
Up now.
These last few weeks, whether it was this whole Donald Sterling thing to the shooting in Santa Barbara, to this guy killing the cops in Canada, to the whole Bo Bergdahl thing, to then the guys killing the cops in Las Vegas. I mean, and then you got the whole Snowden on the NBC interview where it's like, is he a hero or is he a traitor?
Can we talk about the crazy theories with Snowden, or do you think that's not even worth mentioning?
No, I don't know.
I don't know, man, because these cutting-edge theories to me like represent so much more believability than a guy just simply being allowed to turn.
I don't know, man. I just think Snowden is to me, man, every interview that I've seen him in, man, he just seems like one of the most intelligent guys anywhere.
180 IQ, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, I think he's genuine. And well, I've met Greenwald before, and I'm talking about, I met Greenwald 2 years ago before he got famous, you know, real big. He was already well respected in the anti-establishment journalism community, you know. But I met him 2 years ago before he got real famous, because now I saw a thing, what's it called? The debate today, and they basically announced him as the most famous journalism of our time, basically. I mean, the most famous journalist of our right. time. And it's true, man. I mean, everyone knows the name Glenn Greenwald, and right. I got to see him 2 years ago, and dude, the guy is completely genuine, man.
Right.
I know for sure, because I the vibe that I got from the guy, and you can always tell with the vibes, man, because anyone can run their mouth, but they're going to put out a different vibe. And I'm a huge believer in being able to read people up from their vibes. And Greenwald, to me, came off as a completely genuine.
Well, I think Greenwald is, but, I mean, Snowden's going to always be this polarizing figure, because we have somebody like Chelsea Manning who's doing a hard time now. For all we know, he or she, or however she decides to be portrayed now, hasn't been heard from in a long time. Really, the story's kind of died out. Does anybody have any real authoritative idea where she is? The answer is pretty much no. It's an undisclosed military, prison. So Snowden's free. He's protected by, you know,
he's being protected.
He's protected
Russia,
by
of course.
The Russian security
yeah.
apparatus, which is probably only slightly worse than ours, if not equal. I have no idea. Maybe even our guest knows more than that. But the thing is that these people are like highly, highly controlled. Like you don't get to access the files he has without being able to have a degree of trust that's going to go beyond a disclosement contract or something. In other words, dude had to be chipped.
The only way that he... This is the thing. I don't believe that he'd be able to get into that position with the intent of doing it. Okay? I don't think he got to where he worked by trying to get in there to steal these documents.
So they turned him.
I think what happened is he went in there, and then when he realized the vast amount of data that everyone was being spied on with,
right.
he just turned on his own. And he was just like, dude, he's like, I came in here with the highest, like the best intentions, but I've realized that this is completely immoral.
Right.
And he was like, screw it, I'm going to do it. And he was already an independent thinker. He was say what you want about Ron Paul, but he donated to the Ron Paul campaign, you know.
Right.
So obviously he was already thinking outside of the Republican-Democrat thing, and he was already kind of having those kind of thoughts.
Ideals.
Right.
Yeah, the ideals. And so then when he got in there and saw, oh, damn, these guys are really abusing their authority. Yep. So he was like, screw it, I'm going to just leak them. I mean, I don't know. That's what I like to think of Snowden as. Like, but of course, there's other possibilities. Yeah. But I just like to think of him as a sure. genuinely legit guy that beat the system, like, for once.
I think it's somewhere in between those two things. Like, he, you know, what I read today that an ex-KGB guy came out and said was the Russians were able to go ahead and dupe him into coming out to Moscow. And once he came out, it was over. I mean, they had him. They took him. They then leaked that he was about to leak secrets. So then the U.S., of course, canceled his ability to come back home when he got stuck in Russia. See, it's all a bunch of tit for tat on a level me and you couldn't even fathom, which is the intelligence security apparatus level.
Yeah, think about it, dude. If a guy like that came here from Russia, the CIA would have their hands all over the guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, let's just face the facts. Yeah,
right.
And that's the thing, is what that is one part where I do have questions about Snowden, is where he denies all the, completely denies ever meeting Putin. He completely denies working with the Russian government. But think about it in a reverse situation, we'd have our hands all over the guy.
Right.
So, I mean, he's probably not allowed to say anything.
Right.
Is the other thing, is like because of that, I mean, the only reason they're giving him the protection is on condition that he doesn't say a damn word about anything
right.
That he's doing with the Russians. And right. That's understandable out of self-preservation, you know?
It's to the point now where I believe it's at a level that other governments around the world that can do something about this massive, all ever-encroaching apparatus that's just gotten into every infrastructure there is now and has a tentacle and everything, you can't allow that to exist because then you have just this one super-powered sect of people that are going to manipulate and control everything, and we're all stuck. We're all enslaved. It doesn't matter if you're rich in another country. If you're not the right kind of rich, if you don't have the right bloodlines, you're still enslaved. It doesn't matter.
And doesn't it seem like the three people that are really coming together on this national security statism, it's the U.S., England, and Israel.
Yep.
The trifecta. Because you can kind of tell that mainland Europe isn't really going for it, man.
No.
They don't like it at all. At least their people don't like it. The politicians may have these backdoor deals.
Right.
But, I mean, we're talking about maybe 80, 90% of the people in Europe. They just had the Google thing was making headlines all week about how the Europeans passed a law that said that they have the right to disappear from the internet.
Right.
So Google was like overloaded with requests to say, "Hey, take everything of me off this off the internet."
Yep.
In Europe, they got a much higher tendency of saying, "You know what? We don't want to be spied on and all that stuff." But it's England, the U.S., and Israel working together. And Israel ties in the whole terrorism spying stuff. They're the cutting edge of all the anti-terror technology and stuff.
Right.
We're the weapons guys. And England is the financing, you know,
well,
and they're the middleman.
It's been known as the shield, the sword, and the crown. And any brunt of an attack Israel will take, we'll mop it up on the direction of UK, of our leaders, of our they're still our monarchs. Don't think the War of 1812 didn't make us a colony again, because it did. We lost it. No one really knows their history, but We were embargoed and blockaded so long that we decided to accept their central banking system back in just so they'd stop fucking blockading us. And so we could have a 13 colonies flourish because they cut off all sea trade.
Yeah, and I hate to talk about the token Rothschild, but it was a Rothschild quote that said, "I care not who makes their laws, I just care who prints their money."
Exactly.
And so, it's once you install a central bank, you're no longer a sovereign entity.
No.
Once you have a central bank, then guess what? You're controlled by other central banks.
Well, you're controlled by the crown.
And you're you're controlled by the interests.
Right.
That's just how it goes. On the board of directors of the Federal Reserve, it's all banking execs, banking lobbyists, and
it's all royals. Bankers. It really is royals or robber baron children. And it's continuing on that way. Now the old guard is sloughing off because the old system doesn't work anymore because we don't have a really, really dumb, uninformed populace. The internet's just destroyed their whole little house of cards because the new generations are tapped out. They're just done with it. We don't want it anymore. I don't even like, I'm looking to get in that energy fusion car so I can plug it in. I'm tired of $60
gas tank fills. I'm tired of it. Every day I get in my car, I'm like, there's money out of my pocket I'll never get back. It's just stupid, and I'm just tired of the old game. I want a house with solar panels, windmills, and an electric car, and I want to be off of this crap. And if I can't make enough money, I'm not going to worry about it. I'll grow food.
Yep.
And I'll never have
food
a power
is money.
Bill. So this is the way that the people that are, I would say, right now I would say this. If you're over 60, you're the only people that are watching the news anymore. You're the only people reading papers anymore.
Oh, yeah, man. I talked about it on the last show. You know the average age of an O'Reilly Factor audience?
66 or
72. So we're talking about, I mean, and the average age of a person watching MSNBC was like 58. I mean, it wasn't much younger.
It's not
CNN
younger.
CNN is like 59,
no,
something like that.
Those dinosaur days are gone. It's just... It's going to hurt so bad, I know, that your whole life was filled with lies, the baby boomer generation. I know it sucks. I get it.
It was just real sugar-coated, you
but
know?
But it was ugly, and it's still ugly, and we make it uglier by trying to take everything from everybody else when we've had technology forever to make all this free.
It's
a parade.
I figured out the equation of old stream media. We don't even talk about them as mainstream media anymore because they're not even mainstream. They're just old
stream.
They're
not relevant.
Now, I figured out what they do. They sugarcoat the stuff that's actually important, and then they sensationalize the stuff that's completely irrelevant.
Right.
Right? So they take a little thing, one guy saying one thing, right? Let's just say let's not say what it's about. Let's just say the media takes one guy that says one thing.
Sound blurb, yeah.
And they turn him into about 2 weeks worth of headlines. Meanwhile, at the same time, Obama's trying to make backdoor deals for the TPP trade pact, and when they're blowing up this thing about Duck Dynasty, he signs in the National Defense Authorization Act, which allows for indefinite detention of American citizens without trial, which is just completely unheard of in our past.
Last time
and,
it was
and they talk about Duck Dynasty, one guy saying one thing. That's all they ever do.
Yep.
Yep. One guy or one woman says one thing, and they turn it into this completely sensationalized tabloid nonsense, reality show, TV, news.
It's almost like a formulated scapegoat.
Oh, no, it definitely is. It definitely is. And they do that on purpose, and then what they do is they completely basically downplay or completely ignore the real issues. Now, we're talking about – now, last week, this week – okay, the end of last week – The European Central Bank announced that it was going to put in negative interest rates. No, seriously.
Throughout the entire EU,
so that's
coming next. So
they have negative interest. So anybody that has money in a bank in the EU, that money is going to get negative interest.
Right.
It's not going to – there's no savings effect. Back in the day when we actually had a middle class, when you save money in the bank, it would actually gain 5% interest, 8% interest maybe.
Yeah.
You'd actually have you got a middle class person has 30, 40 grand in the bank, you'd actually make a couple grand on that a year.
Yep.
But now in the EU, guess what? You'd lose a couple grand on that a year.
Oh my God.
Well, and the stock markets and in the media it plays out like this. The stock markets celebrate the move of the ECB and the stock markets start going through the roof again. It's like you guys are celebrating the fact that they're installing negative interest rates? How disconnected from reality are you?
Well, that's what it is. It's the elite class now.
I can tell you one thing. You never see the lower class or the middle class ever celebrating.
No. Well, what happened is this. All those bank stocks that were taking a dive, now they took a big jump because they have all this new revenue stream. Because guess what? People are still under the impression that the FDIC could actually even save them if the banking system collapsed. It could never possibly even save one bank.
They'd have
look
to print
up IndyMac.
Every dollar that got bailed out by the insurance would have to be printed out of thin air.
It would. It would devalue
which, okay,
the
so
currency.
Basically, if the FDIC was ever actually needed, it would result in a period of hyperinflation.
Unheard of.
Let's face the fact. The FDIC was put in place after the Great Depression to try to give people the confidence that, okay, well, I don't have to worry about the bank run because even if everyone pulls out their money from the bank, it's federally insured and up to $250,000 or whatever it is up to nowadays. But if that ever had to be used, we'd be in hyperinflation because yep. every single one of those dollars that was refunded because the bank went out of business would have to be created out of thin air.
I would say
if we ever had to see FDIC used, that would be the clue that we know hyperinflation and that impending economic uncertainty, which makes what we're experiencing now look like beans. Nothing.
It's going to be simple, man. Like just one day, the banks are just not. They're going to be closed. It's just going to be that easy.
Yep.
What will you do when that happens? Most people have 3 days of food and water, and then they're going to go to the FEMA camp. That's it. Then you get shipped. That's the whole game. It's the end of the game. So the way to prevent it is just we have to, before enough bad people get into positions of power, have to get everyone self-sufficient as much as possible so we can last a lot longer than 3 days.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sustainability.
I mean, the people that are self-sufficient are the resistance. Those people are the resistance. Because yep. everyone else is either going to be roving the streets, rioting for food,
yep.
or turning to government shelter.
Well, but which is going to be unbelievable. I mean, you're talking about a mind wipe for sure or something crazy like that. I mean, you're going to see the real zombie apocalypse for real. I mean, you really think all this modern media shit's not actually just preparing us for these events they already see unfold? Watch the new True Blood trailer and tell me FEMA abandoned everyone and the government's gone. What would happen? They're preparing everyone for what they think will happen when the dollar collapses because it's going to be worthless. They can't have anybody in the whole world trade with them if nobody will want to deal with our government, man. And it's at that point.
Yeah.
Which
is why we need to trade with each other, right? And if we look at civilization as a whole, now on the books, on the records, you know, one of the first major civilizations was Mesopotamia, right? And what did they do to create that? They created an economy. They started cultivating food. They started domesticating animals. And they started making goods, pottery and simple things like that. That's how it started, right? But what created that civilization was economy. And so at the very base of any civilization is economy, and the underlying structure is built on food, right? Because the first thing they had to do is learn how to cultivate food. Once they figured that out, then they were able to make an economy, because once people had an abundance of food, they were able to trade that food for other goods, and then they started to increase their quality of life, right? That's basically what civilization is all about: increasing quality of life, less physical labor, more benefits of your labor, things like that. That's what civilization is all about. You want to work less, get rewarded more, and have more opportunity to do what you want and be free, right? And so underlying anything when it comes to civilization is economy. You know, and so you look at places with really bad economy, guess what? They got really bad situations too. They got very, very little freedom, they got very little opportunity, you know. So I think that's where we need to focus, man, is one, of course, to fix the economy, first you have to get outside of the grip of the monetary system. Because if you're under the grip of the monetary system, your money's getting funneled upward. You know, let's just face that. You know, even if you're just dealing cash, I mean, let's say you're just dealing cash off the books, tax-free, and you're just wheeling and dealing off Craigslist and whatever, okay? And I know people that do that, and I've done it before in the past. But even if you're doing that, guess what? Your buying power is still decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're participating in the dollar system, guess what? Your buying power is going to decrease. So people need to really think about getting out of the dollar system first.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get out of the dollar system, then you can talk about fixing the economy. And I think that's the first step. And of course, economy is framed by food. And food underlies any economy. Without food, you have no economy.
And if it's something as drastic as moving from where you live to a place where there is farmland available and there are places where you can get yourself off of this dependence, it could be really painful now, but it will be a hell of a lot more painful later if you can do it now. I know it's a crazy thought to kind of pick up and leave a food desert, but it's a smart thing to do prior to anything crazy happening and being stuck in a giant city and there being no food, because, you know, the Hunger Games will be real if the dollar does collapse, and it looks like it could. You know, we get a lot of our food from Central America. They don't want it anymore. So what are we going to do? We can't grow enough. We can grow enough beans and rice and wheat and stuff for, I don't know, about 200 million. But we have 330.
Well, we throw away half of our food.
Right, but that's not going to change. You think a farmer will grow food for free? The government's going to requisition everything that can grow food and just enforce it with guns.
Yeah, and, it's not going to be too tough. As it is, the government's subsidizing the farmers to produce less in some situations to keep the price in check, because the government is involved in price rigging, which is part of the reason why now the government has to be involved in setting the price of labor. Because if they're going to rig the price of the food, then guess what? If they're going to force the food to be expensive, then they're going to have to pay the people. They're going to have to force the companies to pay the people higher, because there's a higher cost of living.
Right.
And so this whole minimum wage debate, and I'm glad we were able to get into this one. In my opinion, it is needed right now. The minimum wage has to be in place. Otherwise, the inflation would completely decimate these people. Imagine without it. The inflation is, I mean, if the minimum wage was kept up with inflation, the minimum wage would be in the 20s right now. I mean, we're not even, they're talking about 15 an hour. That's like laughable almost. That's not even kept up. I mean, so people getting paid $20 an hour compared to what it was in the 70s, that's like, they're still getting screwed, dude. That's still, I mean, can you, $15 an hour is still not a livable wage. It really isn't.
People were making $15 an hour in 1950. Which, if you equate it to today, that's like $44, $45 an hour. Now, that's a living wage. That's what allowed you to have a home and a summer
home
and a boat and a car for the missus, and she could stay at home and raise your kids. And then they actually had some super parental supervision, and they were raised correctly. I mean, these 50s things where we were on the top of the world, they can happen right now everywhere in the world. It's like we always say, the energy's free.
Yeah.
So everything else is free.
Yeah, and ever since 2008, after the huge bailouts, we've seen that whether it's male or female, the whole workload for the whole household has gone way higher, right? So everyone's got to work two jobs, extra hours, and all this stuff just to keep up, you know. And now we're seeing that the children are being, you know. There's not enough time between the parents and the work and all that stuff and the kids, right? So now we're seeing these idiotic episodes, like these kids that are killing, that were stabbing this other little girl because of the Slender Man cartoon or whatever. That's just some internet meme, right? But it's all a symptom of the system, man. It's like everyone's trapped in this hamster wheel. Everyone's got to work extra jobs. Now both parents have to work full time. Now the kids are being neglected more or less.
And most people do jobs that are hamster wheels. They basically do a job a computer can do, but because we're insistent on keeping people employed at asinine jobs, we keep people doing stupid stuff like this when they should be out creating. Now if people aren't creative or aren't entertaining, I don't know what to tell you. We're not all gifted. Maybe we can have some incentive for you to do that, but we don't need people to be, you know, cashier is the dumbest position ever. That's so stupid. What does that teach you in any kind of career? To push some buttons? I mean, these things were so far beyond.
Yeah, the cashier is being replaced by the kiosk.
Good. Because then what you need to do is you can't just leave people out to dry. You got to make education free and allow them to become an expert at things.
And the other thing you need to do is, instead of having labor unions, which by all means I've always been a supporter of labor unions, but if labor unions were smart, they would start converting, instead of going for a minimum wage, they'd be going for chunks of ownership of the companies. So that they, when the jobs do become replaced by robots, guess what? The members of those unions still receive the profits from that.
Right, and then they can pursue higher education to go on to their next career.
Exactly, man. So the problem is, it's not the technology. The technology is actually a gift. All this stuff, all this great technology is going to free us up from doing all these labor-intensive, mundane jobs, right?
Right.
But the problem is the economy. If we allow all these machines that run all these companies now, that are going to be running all the kiosks and all these guys, like Redbox, for instance. Redbox is owned by Coinstar. Coinstar is that company that used to that has those machines in the supermarkets where you put your coins in, they print out a receipt and you turn it in for a dollar.
Right.
Okay, and that those companies have a bunch of other companies. Allow all the machines to be owned by all these very few people that are owning all the machines right now, so we're going to run into big problems. Otherwise, the technology can free us, but it can also enslave us.